Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello again. Welcome back. The solstice is past. And I have this slight sadness every year when that happens.
Really? Yes. Because already we're heading potentially towards winter.
Which is ridiculous because we've got all the glory of the summer and the autumn ahead of us. But I always feel that joy on the 21st, 23rd, up to the 25th of December because it's the turning point. So maybe that's quite naturally. You've got a whining hound in the background.
I think Fergus probably just came in.
Brilliant. So, okay.
Yeah, he's all right. That was hello, hello kind of whining, not I desperately need something.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, is an example of a Cancerian ascendant immediately jumping to does something need help? But you wanted to talk about an eye for an eye.
Yes.
And I'm going to talk about the West Wing again because this is the most... Aaron Sorkin is extraordinary as a writer, and there's an episode where a man is due to be killed by a lethal injection because the Supreme Court has turned down the final appeal, and it's unexpected. It happens on a Friday night, and the lawyer knows one of the president's advisors and said, "Please get it before the president because only the president can commute this sentence," and he's going to be executed at 12:01 on Monday morning. And the first question from the chief of staff is, why Monday morning, why not tomorrow morning? And then he went, oh God, of course you don't kill a man on the Sabbath, the Jewish or the Christian Sabbath. You do not exercise that. I mean, how hypocritical is that? We don't kill you on the Sabbath, but we'll kill you any other day. Yeah. Anyway, and the whole programme is about the president sort of saying, well, I don't know if I can commute this. Well, you know, 71% of the population support the death penalty, and I don't know what to do. And he's got a Jewish advisor whose rabbi talks to him. One of the people who comes into the office that day, that's something else, is a Quaker, and somebody and his own Catholic priest he talks to that day. And he talks to the Pope, as you can. And and one thing about Catholicism is it's totally against the death penalty. Well, so score one for Catholicism on that. But anyway, and at the very end of it, he doesn't do anything, but he sits with the Catholic priest in the Oval Office at midnight while the man is being executed. And he says to the man, I do pray. The priest says, did you pray, Jed? And he says, yes, I prayed. I did pray. And I never got an answer. And that really pisses me off, frankly, because I never get an answer. And then the priest tells him the story of the drowning man. Do you know that one about the man there's a great flood? And he's sitting on the roof of his house and the floodwaters are rising. And he's saying, God, please save me, please save me. And a man in a rowboat comes past and says, get in the boat. And he says, no, I'm a religious man. I've prayed to God. God will save me. So the rowboat goes off. And then somebody else comes along in a helicopter and says, let me help you out. No, I'm a religious man. God will. So, and the story goes on. Eventually the man drowns and goes to heaven and demands an audience with God saying, I was a religious man, I prayed, you never saved me.
I sent you a boat
and God said, I sent you a radio report, I sent you a boat, I sent you a helicopter, what do you want from me? So the priest says to the president, who said, God did not answer me, he said, he sent you a Jew, a Quaker, and me. What more could he do? And the discussion against the Jewish staff, which is why it's so relevant that the Judaism is in here, is they do discuss this fact that in the Old Testament it talks about an eye for an eye.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah, and Toby, who's the communications advisor, who's Jewish, says, and even the rabbis couldn't handle that 2,000 years ago. If you look at the literature, at the Talmud and everything, even they couldn't handle that. Even they looked for every excuse not to apply that letter of the law, always to look at the spirit of the law. And that's what we have to do. That's what Christianity originally was all about, a Jewish guy coming as a great prophet to remind them of the spirit of the law.
Okay. So even though the letter of the law is an eye for an eye.
Yes.
And that actually is in there. That is
yes.
What it
oh,
says.
Yes, it's in there. There's a lot that's nasty and brutish in the Old Testament, without a doubt. And actually, one of the things somebody said to me recently, and I can't remember who it was, but it was a great person, and a great saying was, do you know something? Everybody goes on about how nasty the Bible is. Don't you have to have some respect for a nation that owned up about how critically awful its behaviour was? Wrote it all down in a book with God's vengeance and God's mercy and the fact that no matter how bad they were, God kept loving them. Why don't we see that?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we respect the fact that it's a story of a nation that was deeply corrupt and dangerous and bad, just like our world is now, and honestly owned up to it?
Is it honestly owning up to, or is it saying this is the way to do stuff? Because that's how it tends to be presented.
That's how it's presented. But if it depends what you're reading. You see, Torah is basically this is how it stands. And the three books of the law, two of the books of the law, were added in later.
Mm-hmm.
And the first book of the law was edited. So it all came down to the letter of the law being superimposed on the spirit of the law. And when you get any religion that focuses on the letter of the law has lost spirit.
Mm.
And that's one of the reasons Jesus came. The prophets were always saying, no, we will love you through this. Don't be such idiot assholes. God, I'm mad as hell with you, but I'm going to love you through it. And we don't read the prophets.
No. Okay.
We really don't. Hosea is a peon of forgiveness. You ever read Hosea?
No.
Why would you? Why would anybody read the prophet Hosea? I only read it when a Jewish guy told me that, and I went and looked at it and went, okay, it's not very well translated, but if you look at the Strong's Hebrew, this is beautiful.
Okay.
But then actually,
talking of some of the horrible stuff that's in the Bible, I'm afraid I can't tell you where it was. Mm. I just know it's in the Old Testament somewhere. Page upon page upon page upon page of what amounts to sort of slut-shaming.
Oh, yeah. That was the reaction to the end of the First Temple.
Aha, yeah, that's...
And yes, it's appalling.
Mm.
It's utterly appalling, but there's a word called Kodesh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it could be Kodesh or Kadesh, depending on the vowel that's put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it either means holy ones of the temple, or it means prostitute,
mm-hmm.
according to whether you put the A or the O in. Mm. And it was changed at the end of the First Temple. And it was the holy priestesses of the temple changed into the prostitutes.
Yes, as has happened
with
almost every word we have for...
Yeah, like cunt.
Yeah, for sacred feminine has become a word that has been completely denigrated.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact original of the word cunt, but it was the spiritual woman. It was the proud, strong, spiritual woman. It was a Gaelic word or a...
No, I can't remember either.
No, but we can find it out for another book. But it was originally the most beautiful word, and it wasn't only associated with women either.
Right.
When people use that word in front of me, I just go, well, I don't know about you, but mine is warm, welcoming and incredibly beautiful. How is that an insult?
Classic Maggie.
Which is possibly why I don't get on the radio more often.
Excellent.
Also, I think one of the things about the Old Testament is it's got a lot of stuff in that's going to provoke our anger.
Mm.
And I think actually we need to have this anger provoked. Because one of the things that annoys me about the cynical atheist is it's so lazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the easy way out. I don't like this hideous, horrible religion about the old man in the sky. And it's just reject. That is the easy way.
Mm.
And I'm an arrogant git because I didn't take the easy way, which was, no! Jesus, wet, that's not right. What's really going on here?
Mm.
You know, is there actually a root in this? Is this all wicked and evil? And if I know that it's all wicked and evil, then I've got a solid ground, a foundation to stand on to say no.
Yeah, I reject this because I know what it's about.
Yes, and I'm not going to reject it when I don't know what it's about.
Fair enough.
which is why we're not going into a discussion on vaccinations, because I don't think we really should. But I am I am talking to informed people on both sides, including a guy who was part of the development of the SARS vaccine that went so wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm collating information from as near as I can to the horse's mouth, so I can do decent research without all the emotion and say, okay, I see what's going on here. I see why it's going on. I will now make my own decisions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's the wise thing that we don't do. We just read more and more and more on the news, and the ego needs to hate.
Yeah.
It needs an outsider. It needs the other to be wrong.
Why?
Because it's based on tribe, my tribe, your tribe.
Okay.
My home, your home.
Yeah.
And we formulated it so badly when we built fences. Up until then, it was we have to share to survive.
Yeah.
If I walk onto your land with my cattle, I either have to negotiate with you, fight you, or leave. But at least there was some honesty about that. I'm on the land where your cattle graze. You don't own that land, but I need to communicate with you. Is there enough space for my cattle to graze?
Mm.
And again, to care for the planet. But once we had fences, it was, this is my land.
Yeah.
That is your land. You come onto my land, you are threatening me. And the whole scenario changed, and we've lived like that ever since.
Yeah.
My tribe, your tribe.
My tribe, your tribe. And then also my kind of the whole thing of the 1%, my army stronger than your army, my peasants more deferential than yours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we get into this cycle, it seems, of utter inequality and iniquity the 1%.
Absolutely. And we are trained to read books like the Bible and the Quran as is, without investigating them, or even saying, do you think that God could perhaps understand we've invented the fridge? That's my favourite phrase about it. And I know, I wrote a blog a little while ago, so I was lying in the bath, and I think it was Pride Month a couple of years ago, and I was thinking, I know from the history I know about the Bible exactly what that prohibition was about a man shall not die with another man, as with the woman, because it's an abomination. Uh-huh. I know where it came from, I know when it was written, and I know what the origin behind it was, which was the sending off of young boys to some of the temples to be used as temple prostitutes and generally be buggered to death by the age of 12.
Whoa.
That was the origin of that law, and I have no problem with that.
Mm.
And the word homosexual was invented in the 20th century, so it isn't in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at a time also when they were trying to obeying a commandment to procreate,
mm-hmm.
which I think God has changed his mind on now, or her mind on.
Yes, one would imagine so.
And that was the whole point, because I was lying in the bath thinking, I want to write a blog for Pride Month. What have I got to say? Because anybody can counter it. Because you can read arguments one way or the other all the time about what God thinks about what you do in your own private life under the bed covers.
Mm.
Of course, God doesn't give a rat's ass whether you've got a bed to do it in, according to them.
Yeah.
And which is not the case, not a sparrow falls. Mm. But I just lay in the bath and I sort of went into meditation because I love doing that in the bath. Bishop isn't keen, but it's a very female thing to do in water, I think.
Yeah.
And I just heard this soft voice saying, tell them I changed my mind. And I thought, well, that won't work. And it said, just write it. So I did. I wrote this blog, which is tell them I changed my mind. Because situations change, and the deity, the whole creative force, being a conscious thing, can also evolve.
Yeah. True story.
What's needed then is not necessarily what's needed now. And if you hold the letter of the law of 4,000 years ago, which is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And yes, I could, if I ever get to meet the soul that was Jesus of Nazareth, I'll say it would have been helpful if you'd said something a little clearer than the bit about the eunuchs.
What's the bit about the eunuchs?
Oh, so some people are born eunuchs, some become eunuchs, and some are made eunuchs. And that just basically means those people who reproduce in a normal way. Some people are born in a way that means they can't reproduce. Uh-huh. some people are having illnesses or diseases that mean they can't be reduced, and some people are prevented. But it's if you look at it, it's basically saying somebody who is not in a male-female relationship.
Yeah, I'm lost. What is it? What does the Bible say about eunuchs?
Well, it just says that they're perfectly reasonable and natural.
Does anyone say that they're not?
Oh yes, in the Old Testament.
Yes. Oh really?
Oh yes.
Oh okay. I hadn't called you up could, on that you particular
could,
one.
You could have eunuchs were really only for guarding harems.
Wow. Okay.
So they were pretty despised.
Okay.
But a gay man would be regarded as a eunuch because he wasn't going to sleep with a woman and reproduce.
Aha. Okay, now I'm catching up with its relevance. That was a bit of a swerve ball.
Yes, it was a swerve ball. Sorry.
What?
So some people say Jesus is actually talking about people who've had their balls chopped off, and other people will say no, he's talking about people who don't want to reproduce and have sex with the opposite sex.
Uh-huh.
So you can play whichever way you want to. So it was really helpful for me to have, tell him I changed my mind. And I said, did you change your mind? No, but just tell him I changed my mind. I never had a problem in the first place.
Right. Okay. That's the bit I needed to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is why, in theory, we don't need priests. But of course we do. We actually need the odd person to be able to say, it's not quite like that. Mm. You've been taught that by somebody with a hardened heart. And if we harden your heart to the sufferings of another person, you cannot interpret any spiritual text.
Well, also, we see through our projections. Always, that the window that we're looking at reality is the window of our own projections.
Yes.
And so...
Yeah.
Yeah, if your heart is hard, or if you've got a bee in your bonnet about, I don't know, repopulating the planet, or being a bigger tribe, if you like, or whatever, which I know certain threads within Judaism have had over the years, as I understand it, the Hasidic community, is it? Or somebody, anyway, has got this sense that they have an instruction to give birth to as many Jews as were killed in the concentration camps of the Second World War, for example. Yeah. And so if that's the lens that you're looking at life through, then I imagine you're going to really frown at anyone
who can't do that.
You can't or won't, more to the point, I guess, do that.
But that is also a projection, with the greatest respect to the Jewish community, for whom I have huge respect. Without them, I would have no faith.
Yeah.
But if you look at places like Stamford Hill, which is where the ultra-Orthodox live, I think I've said this before, they're all wearing spectacles from very young. They're all looking really thin. They're interbred.
Right.
So somebody at some point's got to go, this isn't working.
Yeah.
This isn't working. And the whole principle of Hasidism, from the Baal Shem Tov, who was a great spiritual prophet in the area around Russia in the 19th century, was love. Love, celebration, and dancing. And the Hasids do dance, but they won't dance with women, and they won't dance in the other way. You know, and they've tied love down with law.
This reminds me of one of my most favourite visual jokes, which I will attempt to convey as a non-visual joke, which is that there is a lady sitting at her kitchen table looking out of her window at her neighbour hanging up her washing. And she is going, tut, tut, tut. I don't know why, she just doesn't seem to be able to get that laundry clean. And the same scene is repeated a few times every day, tut, 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 dirty, dirty laundry. And then in a frame that doesn't have the lady in it, you see somebody cleaning the window. And then the lady's back. Looking at the spotless washing.
Yeah, I think all my affirmations have worked.
Yes, gosh, bless her, must have changed her washing powder.
Yeah, and that's such an important one.
Yeah.
And to lower the tone completely, my favourite meme this week came from the Terry Pratchett group on Facebook, which was a picture of a guy with a cup and a picture of the guy with a skull saying, it's much better for the planet if you drink your tea out of the recycled skulls of your enemies.
Excellent.
which prompted a whole debate about, you know, all the tea would fall out, how you're going to have to turn it upside down and drink it from the bottom.
Definitely. Yes, and hope they were terribly clever so that there's a really, really large cranium so you get
absolutely, a decent cup of tea.
Decent cup of tea in there. Funny. I do love Terry Pratchett's sense of humour. I mean, I realise that wouldn't have been one of his, but...
Oh, it was? Oh, no, it wasn't. Oh, no. No, I think it... No, it wasn't, but it was inspired by one of his characters called Conan the Barbarian. Cohen the Barbarian, that's it, not Conan. Cohen, do you remember?
Did
you
remember Conan the Barbarian?
I mean, no, there's Cohen the Barbarian.
When I was a kid.
Cohen's about 90 years old and he's got no teeth and he's a very old man, but Terry Pratchett always wrote about the never forget rule one, which is never underestimate the quiet little old bloke in the corner.
Which was probably him.
Probably by then, yeah.
How are we doing?
Oh, we're fine. We've got just one of those natural pause points. And isn't it odd how even, especially when we're recording, we've got to fill it.
Yeah.
But there is a natural pause point.
There is a natural pause point. Hurrah. We're allowed to naturally pause. In fact, if we weren't online, we could have a little rest.
I can hit
we're
pause.
We're learning how to do that now. No, I don't think there's any reason to hit pause, but, I mean, you could.
Yeah, absolutely you could. That's the trouble with having worked live for so long. You bloody well couldn't pause. You had to just keep blathering on.
Stress fest.
Okay, anger.
Okay.
Anger. We've been touching on it here and there. I started getting discomfort in my gallbladder area, which is rage. It's bile. Mm. And all this stuff about my mum moving into the home and some resentment and stuff coming up, and I thought, okay, I have been very ill with cancer, I'm much better now, but, and it's 4 years and all that, but I think there's something coming along to tell me I have more work to do. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to get into anger, and it's really very interesting. I've talked about Gabor Mate before, mm-hmm. and this thing that you block things off in your childhood so you can attach to your parents to be raised. And I've been actually talking over with a dear friend, Jane Struthers, fabulous, beautiful woman, astrologer, homeopath and author. And she was looking at my chart for me, because if you're an astrologer, you never look at your own chart, or you can't understand it and your husband doesn't. So you need somebody else to look at it for you. And she said, you must have come, you've come in with the configuration of the planets that meant you'd be a very angry woman. So why aren't you?
Wow.
And so we started working with it. And I, because of Gabor Mate's stories about the people who weren't able to feel rage in certain things, I thought, I'm going to go back through my life and look at instances in my childhood where things that other people have said, God, that was bad. And I've gone, no, it was okay. Mm-hmm. And go back and look at them and say, what's going on? That was why I did this splurt of rage against the ex in the Kabbalah group the other day, because something that I'd sat on that happened in our relationship, I should have suddenly thought, I should have been very angry about that.
Yeah.
And should have said, well, and I just didn't feel the anger. So I went back as young as I could and found certain instances of it. And as a lot of people who are on Facebook know, we had our beautiful bitch, Sappho, got terrified by her extending leash. There was an incident that shocked her, and she pulled the lead out of my hand because I wasn't, she heard a sound that I didn't, and bang, and it was on the short setting, so it banged on the ground behind her, and she thought she was being attacked and ran away and was gone for 10.5 hours, and it was terrifying. And thank you everybody for the love you gave me and all the support from all the local groups who went out looking for her. It wouldn't have worked, but it was so generous and so kind.
Yeah.
And she came back, and you were hugely helpful with that, Susie, and maybe we'll mention that too. But what I realised was I was going to be able to go to bed and I might be able to sleep. We stayed up till midnight and we searched and searched and searched, but she was so frightened she wasn't going to be found at that point. And she could run 20 miles, that's the trouble. She'd be equal. And I thought, oh God, I can't go to bed. And then I thought, I can block this off. And I remember the night Henry died and the weeks after, I was able to block it off. And I thought, well, that's quite helpful at the moment, but I don't think that's helpful in the deep thing. Where did I learn to block off something so fundamentally critical as the death or the potential death or the love, loss of loved ones? because, okay, I managed to get a night's... Well, I didn't with Sappho. I was still awake when she came home at 4 a.m. God, thank you, Susie. Mm. We'll talk about that in a minute. And thank you, Deb, too.
Mm.
But I was thinking, okay, where did I start blocking at this level? Because, yes, it's a helpful tactic if you've got to get to a night's sleep and something dreadful is happening and you have to be fresh to deal with it in the morning. But how did I learn it?
Yeah.
And as far as I've got back at the moment, and I there may be further beyond that, was when I was 7 and we had a puppy, a beautiful Basset Hound puppy called Bella. And my mum's father was taken ill and she found out she couldn't cope with the puppy and it was rehomed. And I remember my father sitting on the bed, holding my hand, saying, "You mustn't show mummy that you care about the puppy."
Oh my goodness.
I didn't cry for that puppy till I was 29.
Wow.
So programming.
Yeah.
And how many of us have got that? So we can't actually access that grief. A little 7-year-old, she'll weep her head off at her beloved puppy being taken away.
Yes.
And I just shelved it.
Wow.
That's so
hard.
Isn't it? But it was normal for me because we had to protect my mother.
Mm.
And it, just the other week also an incident came up. I was talking to my brother about the time. My brother and I have got a really good relationship now, which is probably because I started expressing anger to him about my upbringing, which he didn't know about. He was away at boarding school. He's got his own stuff, bless him.
Is he older?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I was talking to him about the time my dad needed money from West Midlands County Council for the Railway Museum, and the head of West Midlands County Council, Sir Stanley Yap, yes, I will out you, came round for supper. I was 18 and at journalism college, and he said, "So what are you doing with yourself, young lady?" Because I was sitting in the living room before dinner, I was still living at home. And I said, "I'm training to be a journalist." And he said, "Oh, well, you're a whore then. All female journalists are whores."
What?
And my parents said nothing.
Oh, my God.
And we went into supper and he went on insulting me and my parents said nothing. And in the end, I said, "Excuse me," and went upstairs and was crying in my bedroom. And both my parents said they heard me crying, but they didn't come up. And then later that evening, Sir Stan threw some of his food at my mother, at which point my father phoned for a taxi and made him go home.
What an outrageously horrible man.
Yeah. And sorry, but my parents behaved very badly. Very badly.
Yeah.
And even my brother, when I told him the story, was chuckling about the fact that Stan Yap threw a sausage at my mother. Oh, I must tell people that.
Rather than being...
And I still haven't said anything to him because I went back into my the usual family mode, if you don't complain.
Yeah.
But next time I talk to him about this, I'm going to say, "Do you realise, Michael, you laughed at the sausage, but you did not care that your sister was called a whore?"
Yeah.
So, you know, it's actually time for a lot of anger to come up.
Mm.
Because I was, that kind of thing was deemed to be acceptable. Mm. And when I complained about it when I was younger, one boyfriend once, somebody was being rude to me at a party, and he didn't say anything. And then this guy, because I stonewalled the guy, because I'm very good at appearing to be very strong and powerful, he started being rude to another girl, and my boyfriend stepped in and stopped him. And when I said, "Why didn't you defend me?" he said, "You don't need defending, you're a strong woman." Which is why I have great issues with the phrase strong woman. But all these things seem to me to be the way they were meant to be. So, and I didn't get angry about them. So I'm telling these stories now in the hope that some other women and men too will go, "Where have I stonewalled my justifiable anger?
Yeah.
Where have I hidden it in a pocket? And where is it coming out in my body now?"
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that every single person with fibromyalgia or ME or chronic fatigue of any sort is somebody whose body is screaming with anger.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I see any autoimmune disorder, anything that you could vaguely call an autoimmune disorder,
yes,
as being about
anger and grief.
At least in part about repressed rage.
Yeah.
Or more accurately, actually, potentially rage turned in on yourself.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, well, I got a blood cancer. My lymphatic system turned on me.
Yeah.
We didn't. It was just going, help, yeah, help. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, well, it could have done if you hadn't, you know, if you hadn't done the work, as it were.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not, I'm not attempting to say that it's our fault if we get ill or our fault if we don't get better or whatever, but we can and do participate in the process.
Well, it's not our fault, but it is our childhood training that blocked the parts of us that would have defended us from that illness. Mm. We've made ourselves helpless. Yeah. We made ourselves helpless in order to survive. And that's the terrible irony of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you have to detach and disconnect in order to stay safe. And that's complete oxymoron.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? When things like that are happening in childhood, our whole version of reality, the reality that should be the human given, if you like, is challenged, because the one who should be the carer is the one who is abusing us in you know, the broadest sense of the word, or very directly. But and so it's cognitive dissonance. Is that what it's called?
Cognitive dissonance. Yeah,
that can't be what's happening. It cannot be.
Yeah,
because the one who looks after
me. They just told me they love me.
Exactly.
They've given me a cuddle. And now, so this must be another form of love then.
Yeah. But, we just tuck it away and don't even remember it.
Yes, we don't even remember it.
Because it can't be what's happening. It can't be.
No.
The world is far too dangerous and threatening
if
we allow that to be the thing that's happening.
Yeah. I do want to honour you about Sappho, because it was the most terrifying situation for us, because we love that girl. We haven't had her very long. Mm. She came from a hunt and she was so frightened by that banging thing behind her that she shot off across the old A30. And thank God for the relationship with the divas and the great mother, because I was saying, keep her safe, keep her safe. And I would like to tell that story, even though that we're going to go over the time, because it is... Underneath the fear, there were good things that could be done, and we did them, and it worked. So I would just like to share those with people. First of all, there is a web page on Facebook and everywhere, which is a page for lost dogs.
Mm.
And they have excellent advice about what's happened when your dog's frightened and what you should do, and how to put their bed outside with some smelly clothes on and things like that to help tempt them home, and how not to chase them and not to expect them to come back to you when you call them, because they're way out of the zone of safety and everything's an enemy. And everybody on Facebook who was so kind and looked and sent blessings and love. And I went straight to you and to my friend Deb Rowley in New Zealand simultaneously, mainly because it was already evening and Deb was just getting up in the morning and asked them to tune in. And it was important to ask somebody else to contact Sappho, because I was deeply emotionally involved.
Mm.
So that if you need help with something, and it's always good to get the detached person, which is why to ask somebody to pray for you or intercede for you, just because they're going to put the question clearly.
Yeah.
So please tell what you did.
So I just... Okay, so I stepped into non-ordinary reality and asked the spirits, where is Sappho? And I saw her run across an empty road.
Yeah.
So you'd told me that she'd run that she was the other side of the A, whatever it was.
Old A30, yeah.
But I knew from my seeing that it was empty,
yeah,
that she hadn't been killed on the road.
Yes.
And so I then went to the other side of the road. And I saw an enormous murky body of water, which in the journey I understood to be Sappho's kind of grief and fear. And she was on the far side of the body of water, and she had this leady retractable collar thing attached to her. But I could see that she'd stopped, and that the big body of water was representing her fear and her grief, and that in the moment of stopping and considering, and she'd already got to the place of stopping and considering all by herself, that she'd realised that although she was terribly afraid of the thing that was following her, which wasn't following her so closely now, which
because it had unravelled itself,
she'd now realised that she was even more afraid of not having somewhere where she belonged, and that belonging was this big thing for her, and she wanted to go back to her pack, by which she clearly meant you.
Yeah.
And so I looked in the murky water at, because I thought maybe there's something in here that she needs, but yeah, the murky water seemed to be just about the enormity of her grief and fear. And so I pointed out that I'd come from where she'd come from,
yeah,
so she'd needed to come back around this big murky, pondy, puddly thing to where I was, and then she had to go back over the A30, and then she had to go home.
Yes.
And that's clearly what she did.
That is clearly what she did. Yeah. And by the grace of God, I was awake at the point she came back, could go out and sit and receive her and just hold her in my arms. And I don't know whether it's relevant that I was absolutely naked at that point, but she and I were both naked together on the porch, holding each other.
Mm.
And what I had done, also blessings that we'd been able to meet since the ending of lockdown. So she'd actually met you.
Yes.
So she knew you came from us.
Yes. Yeah.
So even though you told her you came from us, she recognised you. Mm. And what I did was go into meditation, which I've done with previous dogs when they've been ill, and remember holding her in my arms, having her on the bed, being with me and going back into that energy. So that even though I had the fear, I could disconnect, but I had the fear, I was still holding her at home in my arms and creating a welcome home for her.
Which will have been so important.
Because
even though you were physically disconnected, you are connected by being...
Yes,
you are part of one another's pack.
Yes.
And so energetically, your emanation would be something she would still be aware of. And so you were emanating... home, it's lovely here, you get cuddled, there are beds, there's, you know, the biscuit tin, all that stuff. That's what you were emanating, rather than fear and terror, which is, I would propose, a big reason why she came home as soon as she did.
Yes.
Is because home was emanating homeliness rather than fear.
Yeah. And we had Missy, the other dog, on the bed as well.
Mm.
And she was so comforting, curled up in the small of my back, because I could actually say... yes, Missy, you are here and I love you. And this is also Saffa.
Yeah.
I have a dog in the small of my back.
Yeah.
And when she did come back and she came in line, was so kind, he went off to the spare room after he greeted her and cuddled her as well. So, because there isn't room for four of us in the bed. So I had Saffo curled up at the back of my neck, Missy curled up at my tummy. Didn't sleep a wink because they were both too close. But also what is it clear, and you pointed that out, is it has been made clear to this little rescue dog from a hunt that this is her home.
Yeah.
And she and Missy greeted each other, which is the first time they've done that. Missy came to greet her and they kissed noses and
wagged
to each other. So although it was utterly horrible, it may have been ultimately for the good.
I mean, nothing bad happened to her, nothing bad happened to you, and she's now really clear that she belongs and has
is loved,
a pack, and is loved and has a home.
Thank you, Susie. Thank you, Deb. So any advice to anybody else who loses a dog or something? Find somebody to pray for them and create a nest for them to come home.
It sounds like actually the single most useful thing they can do, frankly, is read that information that you said was on the lost dog thing.
Yes, I'll put...
because it's... put it up on below our...
Yeah, I will.
...pod, because that knowing that when something's afraid, running after it and yelling at it is only going to make it more afraid.
Yes, it cannot see you as the loved person at that point. It cannot even come to you once it's stopped. It's got to make the decision itself that it's time to go home. Which is so difficult if it's running somewhere dangerous, of course. But so if you lose something you love, create the home for it. Recreate the home. To remember.
And maybe, I guess, I mean, I'm no dog expert at all, but my guess would be that to stay where you are and call and call and call rather than running after them.
Yes, but they can't hear the call either. You have to stay where they left.
Yeah.
And if you can't stay where they left, you leave your clothes where they left and make sure you come back regularly.
Yeah.
And it was a one. Yes, it is a wonderful PDF. I will put the link up there. But I also want to say how utterly moved I was by the friendship on social media.
I know. I saw all that.
Levels of love.
So many comments and just like, oh.
And people out looking for her.
Yeah.
Just and I was so moved. And 112 shares.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, gorgeous. You
know, 112 people shared because people were also afraid that she'd been stolen.
Right.
But of course, running across the fields in Devon, there aren't an awful lot of white vans running around looking for dogs in the wilderness. Oh, but it was, thankfully. But kindness. Oh, I'm getting used to kindness, and I like it. Thank you.
It's very good, isn't it?
It is.
Yes.
More kindness. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Bye.